All right. Hello, everyone. It's Chef Ryan Callahan, and welcome to The People Behind Your Food. As you know, we always have fabulous guests, and this week we have a fabulous friend of mine. His name is Chris Gall. He is actually new to the restaurant industry. He's only been working in it for 2 years, and I feel that his input is super important because as a new person to the restaurant industry, he's not super jaded and salty like all the rest of us are, and he has a fresh new perspective on what makes the restaurant industry unique and what makes it great. And we get to ask him questions about why he decided to join our fabulous industry and what he sees that other people don't see. So hello, Chris, and welcome.
Hey, Ryan, how's it going?
It's going great. So that was your nice little intro for you. I hope I didn't get anything wrong.
No, it was awesome. I felt great, like a rock star.
Yeah, it's super cool. We should like play you in with like play-in music, you know, like da 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 da.
Actually,
da, da.
I was kind of hoping for that. I had like some stuff queued up in my phone. Maybe with the interview, I get some cool punch-ins. Maybe I can throw that up there.
But we can get like some guy in a drum set go pa-dum-tsh, every time you tell a joke.
You know, soundboard is all I'm asking for. But you know, I'm not picky. Whatever.
Next time, when we get a budget for this show, I will definitely find a soundboard.
So hey, I'll donate some money.
Right. So let's start with the get to know you questions. All right, are you ready for these?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so Chris Gall, how old are you?
24.
Okay, what's your favorite movie?
Star Wars.
Okay, your favorite TV show?
Game of Thrones.
Okay, what's your favorite? Do you have a?
Star Trek 2, I guess, yeah.
Star Trek, that's a great choice.
Yeah, it's a toss-up. And then it's a toss-up amongst the many series of Star Trek. But yeah. Continue.
I think my favorite Star Trek right now is Deep Space Nine. I just, something about the characters just really connect with me.
Dude, Captain Sisko is, man, it's like, he's like funny, like Kirk, but then also commanding like Picard.
Yeah.
He's like a perfect captain. Really enjoy his character.
And then, of course, as soon as he gets over to the Mirror Universe, you know, he's like the ladies' man.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, what's your favorite music? Your favorite style of music, favorite band, whatever you like.
Love funk, love metal, love rock, pretty much everything. Got a Rush tattoo and a Led Zeppelin tattoo, but have to say, like, right now probably my favorite band is Toe. It's this Japanese progressive metal band. They're fantastic. They've been out for a long time, but great band.
That's awesome. So then the fun question. Are you, because like millennials always pay different ways. Are you a cash guy? Are you carrying around a big wad of cash to pay for stuff? Or are you a card guy? You're a credit card, debit card?
100% card. I wish I was more cash, but nowadays it doesn't even make sense. Like I hardly touch money, you know?
Right. What's the point? You know, like why would you get paid in a direct deposit and then go pull $20 out of your ATM?
But yeah, it's like I'm not in high school buying drugs anymore because I can use my debit card at the dispensary. Oh yeah, where I live in Colorado, where I get my weed.
So what's your favorite type of ice cream?
My favorite type of ice cream is definitely pistachio or coffee.
Okay, what's your favorite food?
Risotto.
It's such a difficult question, isn't it?
Yeah, dude, that's so tough. Because for me, it's like not even like what's my favorite food. It's like what's like my favorite dish, because like my favorite food is like all in that dish, because it's my like protein, it's my starch, it's my like, you know, my greens and some sort of sauce, a little bit of garnish or something like that, you know, it's that perfect thing. But I don't know, yeah, well, I'll just stick with risotto, because that's like probably like my favorite thing.
All right, so do you like dogs or cats? Are you a cat person or a dog person?
Dog person for sure.
Okay, and then where did you grow up?
So I grew up in Colorado. I moved here when I was 5. I lived here for the last 19 years.
Nice. And then you still live in Colorado now. Is that correct?
Yep.
Okay, and then so let's dive in. So I feel like we've got an idea and a handle on what your personality is like and who you are as a person, so we can kind of understand your answers a little better. So let's start digging into your past, right? Your experiences in the restaurant business, your experience in the restaurant industry. So tell me, what got you involved in the restaurant industry? You know, let's start like your path. Where did you start? Did you know that you wanted to work in the restaurant industry, or where did you come from to end up in the restaurant industry?
So I guess I grew up with my dad. He's a fantastic cook. He won numerous amount of chili cook-offs back in California. And he was just always cooking amazing food. And I remember one year, it was like my 12th birthday. And every single time I had a birthday party or whatever, he would always make chocolate chip pancakes for all my friends the next morning. And like, you know, because we do a sleepover or whatever. And that year, like, in my head, like, I didn't even plan it. I didn't, like, talk to my dad a week before. It was just, like, that morning, I was just like, fuck it, dude. It's like, spatula flip. Like, I got this. Like, let's do this, right? And I was, like, 12, and I was like, Dad, like, I want to make it today. And he gave me the batter, told me what to do. He was like, read the instructions, and then he, like, made his own little, like, spice. Basically, it was, like, cinnamon, brown sugar, nutmeg, like a little bit of pumpkin spice, and just like all like the good things like that. And he was like, just like throw some of that in there. And that was like the first time I ever like put a spice into the food. You know, I kind of just like grew up after that, like really feeling, cause like the feeling that I got from feeding my friends that morning was just like, it's like, yeah, like it was good. And yeah, like that made me happy to feed all those people. And then, so from then on, I took every opportunity I could when I could, when I knew I wasn't gonna fuck it up, more importantly, I guess, to cook for anyone I knew, just to get better, and not only them, but like myself, and really kind of fell in love with the cooking. And then after, I was gonna go in the restaurant industry, but I got married and then kind of got freaked out about money. And so I was like, fuck it, I'm not gonna become a chef. I'm gonna go in for the tiny earring. And I did that for a little bit, and then got a divorce and was like, screw it, I'm gonna go smoke cigs outside and, you know, yell at customers for ordering a hamburger for, you know, with a no hamburger and no bun and no sauce and just lettuce and tomato and, you know, that kind
of
stuff.
So it started with this passion of this loving food, being interested in it, and then the instant gratification of watching somebody eat your food and be like, yes, I'm super happy right now. And watching them go from being like, you know, that's the same story I always tell. First time I ever watched a customer eat my food, I was like, they went from being really unhappy to really happy. And I feel like that's a very similar experience that you had, you know. And then, of course, yelling at customers is awesome.
Right. I had been in retail long before, so I never got that opportunity to actually be like, fuck this ass arse, I'm sorry. But that's what happens in the kitchen. That's what we're saying back there, if you ever wonder. Nothing personal. Has nothing to do with you. Honestly, like, I would have ordered the same thing, but fuck you right now, man.
Right, yeah, exactly.
It's just the thing.
So what are you doing in the restaurant industry right now? So what would you say you do?
So I'm a line cook, but I've been tasked with a lot of responsibilities. On the weekends, I manage the smoker for Avery Brewing Company. Our tap house side anyways. And you know, I'm kind of just like a floater, predominantly, you know, and like while we're getting hammered, like I'm on the line doing what I need to do. And then while we're on the downtime, you know, I'm backing up for people and trying to get things going. There are a lot of people who are like designated floaters, and I kind of just like help out when I can, just cause, I love to help people. And I think it's kind of obvious about my origin story and whatnot. So that's kind of like what I do, work the line, hit the smoker, but then I'm making beer batters, cornbreads, rice, like whatever anyone needs help with, really.
Cool. So, is there like a dream restaurant you could work at, or are you in the position that you want to do?
The dream restaurant I want to work at is my restaurant for sure. It's, one day, I want to be my own boss, and I'm going to be really happy with that. And it's nothing to do with like ego, just mostly to do with just I love food so much, and I just want to be the guy who's making the call. Like this is going to be really good, and I'm going to always have a food truck, so that's kind of my dream. But there's going to be a lot of jobs in between there, and a lot of really good chefs that I'm gonna have to learn from. Like, I had the pleasure of working with Jose from Black Belly, who's like top chef winner of like season 5 or 4 or something like that. And that guy is just a wealth of knowledge. You know, Chris Blackwood at Avery, he's been in the industry for like 20 plus years, worked at Jack's fish house. It's pretty, pretty impressive. So it's not like anywhere I go, there's a chance to like hit those like dream points of like learning, I guess. Cause that's the real point of going to a restaurant and cooking for them, is to learn more. But, if I had to put it down, like Black Cat, it's kind of a dream restaurant for me. If I get to the level, you know, maybe, or Arcana for that matter, become like a pastry chef over there, that'd be really fun.
So now I know you went to culinary school. Did you cook before going to culinary school, or did you go to culinary school and then start cooking?
I cooked a little bit, but not a whole lot. My first real job was a dishwasher. Couldn't move up to the line. I helped out every now and then, but it just like, we were like really understaffed and it just like didn't work. And then I went on tour with the band that I was with, quit Avery as a dishwasher, and then went to the pizzeria that I worked at, where I learned how to do a little bit of like basic Italian dishes like carbonara. We did linguine alla vodka, a bunch of cool stuff, handmade pastas. You know, we didn't like hand toss the pizzas, but they're a wood oven or a wood fire oven. So it was just like really good flavors, like really close to true Italian cuisine. And then things kind of went haywire there. And then I decided to go to this culinary school and like actually figure out what was happening with all the food.
And so was it that desire to figure out what was happening, the mechanics of cooking, that made you want to go to culinary school?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It was difficult some days because, like, you know, I'd be like sitting here and I was just panicking because, like, I was like, I barely knew how to properly do it. I knew what to do, but it was just like, after going through school and working the line in a busy restaurant for a little while, it's just like, it's given me such a plethora of knowledge of how to exact certain dishes, where to take corners if you have to take a corner, and what's an appropriate corner to take, and what's messing the dish up, you know? So
would you recommend that people go to culinary school?
100%. You know, it'll take you your life to accumulate the knowledge that you learn in a year to 3 years. I think the biggest problem with learning in a kitchen setting, and the reason why I went to school, was when you get like a really chill boss, they're there to cook their food. They've worked there their entire life and they're ready to just like get their job done and do what's needed for the restaurant. They don't mind like giving you some pointers here and there, but for the most part, it's a lot of do it on your own. And what I've learned from working with a lot of different chefs who's gone to culinary school and who hasn't gone to culinary school, the ones who haven't, you know, use a lot of improper techniques, and because like those chefs that they worked under weren't necessarily always on them and didn't see them, or who knows, maybe like they didn't work certain stations, and so they have like improper technique into like certain areas. You just you see like cold pans being used for sauteing things. You like see, like guys picking up raw chicken with their bare hands and brushing it off on their apron. And there's like nothing, like one time, you know, like there's nothing you can do. At some point, they're just like, they're going to deny it because they think they know better than you, and they don't care what they did it. So obviously they don't care.
Sure.
You know? And so, I think that's like the difference between a culinary cook and a cook who's just learned from chefs. You can do it, yeah, but it's going to require you to go out of your way, as opposed to literally just sitting down and listening and doing it slowly until you master it. And I think that's how you figure out anything. The basic building of any foundation is just doing it slowly until you master it.
Right, right. That makes sense. And, you know, people go to school to get a foundation, a foundational education, and then you build on it. And kind of like you talked on, you know, if you don't go to culinary school, you have to go out of your way to learn the basics. But one of the things I liked about culinary school is that, like you said, it gave you the foundation, But just like if you learned on your own, you still have to go out there and actually actively learn new things, you know? And I think that's one of the coolest things about the restaurant industry is that it gives you the opportunity to always be learning and always be doing better and always becoming, you know, basically greater at what you do to begin with. And so since you're still, well, you know, 2 years isn't super new, but since you're still new to the restaurant business, tell me some of the unique challenges that you've run into being in the restaurant industry.
Sometimes you think you're up enough in because it's been like a slow night, and then like all of a sudden you're sitting down like 10 tops. And so like for fried chicken, the way that we do it at Avery is we par cook everything, and then I kind of have them like resting on speed racks, and then like as the night rolls in, I like pull more and throw it in the fire, bring them up to temp, and then sell them off like that. And so some nights you're kind of like banking on there not being a lot of people. And so you get put in situations where you do that, and then you're doing 15 minute, prep times or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then the ticket becomes like a 25 minute ticket time. And you just have to figure out like how to appease those tables, how to properly do it so that you can start like blanching, like blanch all your chicken breasts right away, then throw those in the oven, get those guys going, finish off your chicken wings, and those little tiny things will just like you'll like pick up when you get in that, like when you're in the weeds. Sure. And you just get your shit, your butt handed to you all the time. Mm-hmm. You figure out those little techniques where you're like, oh, I can do this half here, and half here, split the time up, because like when you're on fry station, you only have so many baskets to draw. So you have to really manage those kinds of situations. As a smoker, you think everything's working out fine. You're like, that meat's going to be awesome today. You walk inside to start prepping some stuff. You come out, everything's black. And you're like, oh my God, it's like, did someone just drop a nuke? little did you realize that your oil valve was like closed or whatever. And so, an ember caught in there, and now the entire thing's up in smoke, and you have to run around figuring out and like close all the hatches and like suffocate the fire and stuff.
Yeah, so it's just it's the like learning the ins and the outs. Now, you've worked at a couple different places. Do you find that each place has its own in and out you have to learn, or was it more like, okay, I've learned a couple of different things at a couple different places and they're all applicable?
Yeah, I think it like kind of depends on two things. It's like everything depends on the dish, and everything depends on your chef, because you were at this one restaurant and your head chef only wanted you to do something one way, it's like you're gonna do it like that. And then like there's certain things where it's like the dish dictates what you can and can't do. So like with like fish, like it's gonna be more delicate, it's gonna like break apart. So it's like depending on what the problem is, like you just have to like, there's only a couple of things you can really do in certain situations.
Sure.
But like everything has its thing, where it's like, there's this, for plating, on the plating side of things, at the restaurant we have a Buddha bowl salad where there's red beets on it. And so like, you have to make sure that's the last thing you do. And you can always tell like a rookie where it's like, he's going like the opposite way, and like the red beets stain everything. And like on the cauliflower, it's like purple, like mm-hmm. all this kind of stuff. And there's just like, so I think it really just, when it comes to figuring out techniques like that, it really comes to like the dish you're preparing, because there's like each restaurant will do things a certain way, and you have to figure out how that way, like with the tools you have, like how you can make that situation a fixable situation,
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Yeah. Cooking is 100% adaption, I think. You just cook and adapt,
I'd agree with that. Baking's a science. Cooking is definitely an art.
Absolutely. 100% agree with that.
Yeah, exactly. And so tell me some of the good things that you've experienced working in the restaurant business.
Probably met some of the best people I've ever met in my life in the restaurant industry. I mean, of course, there's always the backstabby kind of bullshit that goes on. But I've been pretty lucky where Avery manages to pull in some really solid people. But above and beyond that, like, I'd say just the, I don't know, just like being able to do some festivals where you're like, you know, you're grilling, you know, hamburgers for like, you know, like 200 plus people. And like, you know, that's like really cool, because then you actually get to see your customer and like, you know, you kind of like get taken outside those kind of bounds. And there's a lot of really cool things about the restaurant industry. And it's kind of hard to pinpoint just one thing, but because for me, like, I love cooking. So like, that's the best thing that could be given to me, is just like the ability to not only execute one dish, but execute a dish with five other dudes or girls for that matter, and perfectly come together, and the apps are out like, you know, five to eight minutes out, and yeah, the entrees are out, you know, 12 to 15 minutes later, you know, it's like, or, you know, like 15 minutes from when they sat down.
But sure,
it's like, that's, that for me, I think, is probably the most like beautiful thing about the, that I've seen in the restaurant industry.
So it's like the camaraderie, the all these people from all these different walks of life coming together for a common goal to defeat the common enemy, which I always say is the customer, but then other chefs and cooks will always say that it's the ticket machine.
True story. But I mean, that's the same thing. You know, there's the PR way of saying it, and then there's the cold, icy truth of that goddamn ticket machine.
Exactly, it is. You know, they keep coming in. And then, you know, it's like 5 o'clock and there's nothing happening. There's a couple slow tickets. Then it's like 6 o'clock and the volume difference is just, it's like that machine doesn't stop printing. It, you know, it's like, you're like, just stop. And, you know, like, right, to the point where the noise is making your ears almost bleed. Do you ever feel like that?
Oh, 100%. I work fry a lot. Like Fridays and Saturdays, because like sometimes I'll have to like smoke and then come in, and so I'm like managing the fryer and the smoker and stuff, and we do fish and chips, wings, fries, and then fried chicken sammies, and then like depending on the month or whatever, we do croquettes or fingerling potatoes, or like some sort of like kind of potato, other potato that goes in there too. But right, so like if you think about that, that's like, and I have a two basket fryer, and then like I have two fryers, but then one's small and then one's large, and they're both two baskets. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, so you can imagine, you know, you get like, you know, you get three orders of fish and chips with like seven fries, you know, like probably like 10 fries or whatever, and like all these other side orders, and then plus this, that, and then you get like, and then you have to like time things properly too. You can't just like, you know, because like some things are gonna be more cooked than others, and so you gotta like, there's certain things you can mix and can't mix, and
right,
it's a lot of like time management. And kind of forgot the question, but
no, so you were on the right track. It's yeah, it's, you know, one of those difficulties with the ticket machine. You just, like you said, you hit it on the point before you gave up on yourself. You hit it on the point. It's all about time management, and the ticket machine is definitely the enemy. But you can manage it as long as you can keep your head above water.
Exactly.
So how many people do you work with in your current restaurant?
I mean, like, a shift, there's probably about, like, eight of us. But overall, front of house and back of house, probably, like, upwards of 50. Back of house, or actually, yeah, like, back of house is, like, 30. Front of house is probably, like, 20, 25, something like that.
Wow, that's a pretty big restaurant.
Yeah, we do a lot of volume for sure.
That's awesome. And then, you know, you work for Avery Brewing Company. So for those who don't know, Avery Brewing Company is a beer making place. So do you get any kind of benefits out of that?
Oh, it's by far the best place to work if you are in the kitchen whatsoever. If you are just doing anything at Avery Brewing Company, we get full dental, vision, and health benefits. Or I'm pretty sure, like, at least just health benefits. I'm just telling my parents, so I don't really check it too much, but, mm-hmm, you get full benefits. Plus if you work full time, you get 4 6-packs a week, essentially. So plus while you're working, you get beer. And then anytime you come in, you get free beer as well. And so it's just like, You just don't stop drinking. Like, there's so many times where I've taken pictures next to, like, just, like, walls of beer.
Yeah. You know?
It's the best place to work, for sure.
That's awesome. It just sounds like there's a lot of good points to where you work. Because, you know, sometimes, and I don't know if you've worked at these places, but I have, but sometimes you get together with, like, you know, a restaurant that's like a mom-and-pop kind of place, and they just don't have the ability to create a good environment because they don't even have the money to really actually pay you to be there. And so it's just cool to hear that you're working at a company and that you feel like the company appreciates you, number one, and that, number two, you're getting something out of working there beyond just, you know, a paycheck.
Oh, this is the restaurant to come for if you're looking for something beyond a paycheck, because I don't know too many restaurants that are actually able to like do that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because I mean, like, you know, your bar, like, you know, at the end of every night, like, yeah, your bartenders will like give you guys a couple like drinks or whatever, you know, but it's a totally different story. Like,
sure.
I probably shouldn't say some of the stuff I've done, actually, so I won't say it.
So don't say it. Don't get yourself in trouble.
Yeah, exactly. So this will come back to me at some way or another.
Right, but, yeah. This is on recording, you know?
Yeah, exactly. This is on those interwebs now. But, you know, but, like, it's seriously hands down one of the best places to work. Like, just, benefits alone. Like, I don't know many restaurants that are like, oh, my God, like, yeah, they're bending over every day. They're on their feet every day. And I'm like, yeah, maybe we should probably help them, you know, besides getting them drunk enough to, like, stay here, you know?
Yeah.
Which they do adequately well. Are they doing a good enough job? So.
Get them intoxicated enough to forget about how hard today was and we'll come back.
Yeah, exactly, you know, because, like, you know, when you're in a drunken stupor, you just, like, get through every day. And I'm not gonna lie, Avery brews a lot of problems, but it brews far better beers. So
that's awesome. So at your current position with Avery, so you're a line cook, and you're what you call a floater. So you run the smoker, you do stuff on the line, you run the fry station. What else do you do? What are your other duties besides just cooking?
Oh, I mean, like, there's so many in between, like, things to do in a restaurant, whether it's deep cleaning your dishwasher, whether it's taking the garbage out, whether it's just, like, you know, organizing your shelves. Like, not that, like, I spend too much time on, like, you know, that's more of, like, a managerial thing. So, like, you know, like, there's other people who do those things, but, like, I definitely get delegated those tasks a
sure.
lot because, you know, we do a lot of parties. There's a lot of things that, you know, have to be done because it's not just, there's so many aspects to Avery that have to be covered, and so it's really easy to, you know, to let slack slip and need help picking it up, you know.
Sure. So have you ever had to I'm gonna ask you a fun question. Have you ever had to clean the hood yet? Whose responsibility is it to clean all the grease off the hood? For those of you who don't know, a hood is a big vacuum that sits above all the cooking equipment on what's called the line. All the hot, what we call the hot line has, like, the fryers and the grills, and it sucks up all the exhaust smoke and all the, you know, the fumes and the smells and the grease. So, and it all gets trapped in there. So whose responsibility in your guys' staff is it to clean the hood?
Well, it's actually like a two-part system. So every, it's like a night crew thing.
Sure.
But I think it's still Sunday. At least when I was on night crew, that's when it was. But so basically, the dishwashers will take out the hood vents and they'll deep clean and scrub that. And then the night crew is responsible for, like, not only cleaning the hood, but, like, getting into the vents. And that's as grueling as you think it is, especially when you're a tiny guy. You know, like, I'm like 5'7", so I'm, like, pretty average height. But there's a couple of people where it's like, oh man, I'm kind of happy I'm at least, like, average, because that sucks. Because it's like you have to put down the sheet pan. It's just hot. Like, you've been using that all night, you know? So it's like, it's a hot thing. Plus the pilot lights are on. And, like, I've stood on there for a good, like, I used to wear Crocs back in the day because Avery just gave them out for, like, a good, like, 4 or 5 minutes and been like, holy, like, like, wow, my feet are like pretty hot right now. So gotta be careful too.
Yeah.
It's definitely not a, it's not a fun job, and it's definitely not an easy job. But having health insurance makes those kinds of situations a little bit more realistic, because if you fall, you'll be fine. Probably won't be, but it'll work out.
Yeah, probably. Most likely. Maybe not. I don't know. They give out free beer. I don't remember.
That's all you need to worry about.
Right. So what are some of the unique challenges of your current position?
It's a tough question.
Like, is there anything that's particularly harder than anything else? Like, you know, like taking out the trash because you guys have like a 20-foot high dumpster, or doing prep in a tiny space, or, you know, like, what is hardest?
Actually, that's a good point. Yeah, they so like, I think the hardest part about our kitchen is actually the size of it. People look at the size of Avery and they're like, "Holy cow!" It's this, because it's not just another Colorado microbrewery. This is like kind of on the same size as New Belgium, or definitely not Coors, but it's big enough where you could like see it being comparable in size, kind of thing. But the biggest problem with that is there's just so much seating and so much ability for us to seat people,
right,
and serve stuff. And our kitchen is the size of a shotgun style apartment, and so it's like I think that's our biggest limitation, is we make it work, and there's always ways to make things work. Don't think you can just rely on excuses like that, which is why we make, you know, 300, you know, seating. I have to look up how much we can actually seat, but, you know, which is why we can make Avery work the way we do. But it is difficult. That's a huge limitation that we have, as well as when it was built, it was kind of weirdly built. And so, like, our floor drains are at the top of the hills, as opposed to the floors, you know?
Yeah.
So like every single night, it's not just like squeegeeing the floors, it's like squeegeeing, you know, for the lost city of Atlantis kind of thing. We always joke and say it's Lake Avery.
Yeah.
But
that's funny, because I worked at a place back in the day. It was a breakfast place, and we had to, you know, deck scrub the floors and then push it, you know, into the floor drains and squeegee. And the floors were built so poorly that we ended up just having to push it out the back door, because there was nowhere else for that water to go but out the back door. And of course, I mean, when you get fryer grease off the floor into degreaser, it just ends up depositing all over the back parking lot. And as you can imagine, it was like just pure black, you know, just coming out of the kitchen. The kitchen was spotless, but that back loading area was just absolutely disgusting all the time.
Oh, I can't even imagine that. Like, that's got to be such a huge environmental hazard, too, with the degreaser and stuff.
Oh, yeah. They didn't care for it. They did not like us doing that, like, even remotely.
Yeah, totally. That's pretty rough.
It is rough. Because,
I mean, and it really sucks, and I think that's, like, part of the biggest problem with kitchens these days is, you know, there's so many people who want to do this, and it's so expensive to run an operation like that you get forced in those positions where you buy a building that doesn't have a proper floor drain.
Sure, or like you get a contractor who's a contractor who's never worked in a restaurant and doesn't understand that the floor needs to be not level, but and the drains need to be below grade, and that water drains downhill.
Exactly.
I worked in a brand new restaurant, and they told the contractors, these drains need to be at the lowest point in the entire kitchen. Then when they came in with the tile, because they didn't cut down the tubing or whatever to make them sunken, the floor just ended up being pointed upwards at the drain. So you're fighting, you know, you're literally fighting an uphill battle with water. And as you know, that doesn't work so well.
Not even a little bit.
It just doesn't work. So I don't know about you, but we always had, like, you know, funny things happen in restaurants. So tell me a funny story about your time in the restaurant business. I know you were telling me something about a refrigerator on your line that you used to play pranks on somebody with.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No, this is one of my favorite things to do, actually. I kind of worked out one day. But so you, if you go into your low boy, which is just a refrigerator that's has like two panels that open up, and you know, it's just like a basic refrigerator with like an open compartment and like a hood, where like, you know, like if you ever been to a Subway, like there's that's the kind of setup they have over there, where there's a refrigerator underneath and there's like a bunch of open slots for food to go into on the top. And so I jokingly did this prank to one of my friends one day. So he comes into Saute every single night shift at like right at 4 o'clock, and the first thing he does is open the left hand door of the Saute. And like I'd known this guy for like 2 months at this point, and I was just like, and like he's a very predictable guy, like his, you know, but like ace of a chef, and I feel like his habits probably make that reason why he's an ace of a chef. But so he opens the door, and so what I had done was I lifted, you can either use like a sheet tray or just use the whole panel of the refrigerator and angle it down into the door, and then go on the other side of the door that doesn't have anything leaning down in front of it, and then just start lobbing as many ramekins or like bowls or something that's not going to break like onto that thing. So the moment he opens the door, just everything just slides down, and the only thing you can hear for a solid minute is just like, our ramekins are all metal, so it's just like bing, 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 bing. It sounds like a machine gun going off. By far one of my most favorite things I've done to someone, for sure.
That is absolutely hilarious. You know, like, restaurant pranks are almost like iconic. You know, it's like, I was growing up, I never like played pranks on anybody ever in my entire life. You know, I just was never like that. I never had friends like that. But as soon as you work in the restaurant industry, it's like you have to almost like, it, you know, like partake of the culture, you know, like otherwise you're ostracized. But like, it's just so funny that like, you know, people do those pranks when like you would, you know, you're not the kind of guy who like normally do pranks on people. Like, hey, I'm going to totally get Tim over here, you know, because he's always late when he comes in, you know, but like, you know, isn't that just kind of like a weird thing?
I mean, yeah. I mean, I've always enjoyed pranking people. I feel like I'm actually one of those guys. I definitely deep down, but it definitely, like, I couldn't really do that sort of thing because, like when we lived together, I think, like, I did that one time and it just was, like, not okay. And after that, I was like, yep, don't ever prank them. Heard. You know, so it was, you know, so it's like you have to really pick your battles, and I think that's the beautiful thing about kitchens, where it's like that is your battle every day. It's just guys who are acting like that every single day, or guys and girls even, but just, yeah, just like you're always in that kind of situation where it's like, you know, just something funny, something horrible is happening. Like one of my friends like always has a plumber crack, and my other friend like sprinkles salt into it, you know, just as a joke, and it's super uncomfortable, you know, and like,
yeah.
And then like to get back at him, he hides like all of his tongs inside the oven, and you know, so it's like, you know, and then he like hides them there for like 10 minutes and throws them on like the speed rack, and then so like the moment he touches that, it's just like seared.
That's so horrible. And then of course one guy's just like, pull your freaking pants up, dude, because otherwise I, you know, that's his way of communicating that.
Right, and the other guy's like, all right, like, let's do this then. Like, you want to get me? Like, all right, heard, but I'm definitely getting you back. Like, this isn't the end. And it always escalates into something. Like, by the end of the night, if someone isn't, like plotting, you, like, something, like, you know, you guys were actually probably busy and you didn't have the time to, like, you know, pull the prank, you know? So that's, like, the difference.
So tell me, okay, so I just heard you use some kitchen lingo, which was heard. Tell me some kitchen lingo that you've learned, and how, do you find that it leaks into your everyday life, or do you feel like it's, like, changed how you speak, or, like, do you just think it's something that you just, you know, like, you only use in the kitchen?
Oh, 100%. Like, it has... It is who I am now, for sure.
This is me now.
Well, you know, when you spend... I mean, at least, like, even if you spend, like, 6 months in a kitchen, I guarantee you, if you work with more than a few people, you'll be in a grocery store, and you'll be behind someone, and then be like, right, like, behind, or...
Oh, yeah.
You'll say, like, anything like that.
Oh, I do that all the time. Like, I'll be in a restaurant, and I'll be, like, trying to go to the bathroom, and be like, I'll be, like, passing on the right, behind you, you know, like, hot behind, you know, like, or, right. Or whatever, you know, and I can't help it. it just comes out.
Oh yeah, like she, like the other day, like I was in my kitchen and my roommate's girlfriend was making something, and I was just like sharp here, and I was just like, I'm not even like, what am I doing? Like,
right. Like, she doesn't know what that means.
Yeah, like she'd probably turn around and then like walk into me
and walk into the knife, you know? Because she heard you talking to you. You know,
yeah, or, exactly.
Yeah, like corner sharp, you know, corner hot pan overhead, you know, yeah. Like I do that at my own home. Like, thank God my wife has worked in the restaurant industry before, because otherwise she'd look at me like a psychopath.
Yeah, no, seriously, I mean, a little bit, because it's just like my family, like, I remember I was doing that with my family at a family reunion on accident, and then my grandma just kind of like stopped, and she was like, wow, like, you've gotten very blunt lately, and I was like, oh my God, it's already happened. Like, cause she meant it just on like my, like the way that I, like what I said, but like really, like I took it as like, oh my God, cause that's the way the kitchens make you become, is like just a blunt kind of a, like, maybe not like aggressive, but just like, it's just like I don't have time to be nice to you. I have the time to like just say words at you and for you to respond to those words and us to be on like the same level, you know?
It's yeah.
Kind
of. No, I think that's an excellent point, because like it's so loud in a kitchen. People don't understand how loud it is. It's loud and it's hot and everybody's sweaty and tired. And all you can do is just say the most core essence of what you're trying to say. I almost feel like people could learn how to communicate more effectively if they worked in a kitchen for a year, because you'd just be yelling at everybody. You'd just be like, yeah, well, you're an idiot.
Right. You don't have like, and you know, I'm so thankful, because like, I remember like even as a child, like not getting, like completely not getting my order. My dad would just be like, do you like, we should go, like, let's go. Or like, I would get like an order, but it wouldn't be the right order.
Sure.
And be like, let's go back and exchange that. And then I'd be like, no, it's fine. Like, so against being confrontational in any sort of sense, even when I had paid for something and I deserved to get what I paid for, because I just paid for that.
You were raised to be polite and live in a polite culture and a polite society, but the restaurant business is not polite society.
It's like not even about being polite at that point. It's about, it's almost like we're like bomb, like we like, we're like defuse bombs, you know? Because it's like, we don't have the time to like, well, Greg, like maybe,
well, Greg,
if I thought about it like that,
sure.
You know, you don't have time to like sit there and have that kind of conversation.
Well, how do you feel about the steak, Greg? You don't have time for that in the kitchen. You're like, Greg, get me the freaking steak.
Like I said 10 minutes ago, mid rare. Where is it? This is not a mid well. You know, I mean, like, you know, you just gotta like. Yeah,
sure. It's like people get that fascination with Gordon Ramsay where they're like, oh, he's just yelling at everybody. I'm like, he's not yelling. He's communicating efficiently.
I mean, Gordon Ramsay, I feel like definitely upplays it.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
I mean, I'm sure there's chefs where like you're just like lobbing like dishware. It doesn't even matter. Like there's no budget. It just, fuck you. That's
yeah,
all.
No, right. there's no budget to my anger. My anger just gets broken things. Well, like, I had a buddy who worked in a hotel casino setup, and their budget was $1 million for smallwares, you know, like plates, napkins, pans, pots, tongs. And because the casino had to spend a certain amount of money for the local municipality to approve the casino for the local economy's benefit, right, quote unquote, they had to spend $1 million in smallwares just to open this restaurant. So this restaurant had cases and cases and cases of just plastic water pitchers. And we're talking about like a 45-person restaurant. We're not even talking like a 300-person restaurant. And so when they closed, they didn't sell everything. They literally gave it away. So the guys who were in the kitchen were like walking out with like kitchenware, because the kitchen couldn't, you know, the casino couldn't sell it because it was like this special tax thing. And so it's funny because most restaurants aren't like that. The budgets are so close, and yet guys in the kitchen are always breaking stuff all the time. Like, I'm sure you've seen by now somebody take a saute pan when they're angry and slam it against something several times, you know?
Close. Not yet. I think that'd be like, there's a lot of servers who are a little bit gentle where I work, but close enough to that for sure.
So, okay, so here's some more questions. So We've had other people on the show, you know, who are tipped employees. How do you get paid in a kitchen? Are you working for hourly? Are you salaried? Do you get a bonus? What kind of, how are you making money?
So right now I'm making $13. I'm making about $15 an hour. And I think by like average is like anywhere from like 13 to maybe like 16 or so. Mm-hmm. If I was making a salary, I probably would be getting ripped off or something like that. Cause it'd be, I'm sure it'd be like 25,000 and it'd sound nice cause I'm getting a salary, but I wouldn't actually be making any more money. I'd probably be making less. You know?
Yeah. So you're getting paid hourly and you feel like if you were getting paid salary, you'd be like, wow, you're getting paid a flat rate. We're going to get 50, 60 hours a week out of you.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I think that's like one of the major things you have to worry about. There's a restaurant that just opened up and in 4 months it closed down, or it was like 4 or 5 months because of how poorly it was run. One of my friends who's my lead line right now was the Sioux over there. And he was just saying where it was like, you know, he like got the job and he was like, this is going to be sweet. I'm making like, I think it was like, you know, like 27,000 or something like that a year. And he was like, this is going to be really awesome. And he's pulling out like 70-hour work weeks.
Oh like, man, that's like bleed my eyes.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was, in the end of it, he was making, like, I think it was around, like, $10 an hour. And so you really have to, I think that's the biggest part about restaurants is it's so hard to make any money that the number one thing that any independent restaurants can do is kind of gouge you a little bit and do everything they're going to do everything they can to make money. And that includes kind of skimming the corners for your paycheck, for sure.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, the margins, it's like 10%. You might make 10% of your entire gross in a restaurant because the restaurant industry is so competitive that people don't even know that, like, if you get 10% off your ticket, that person didn't actually make any money on your order. Like, the owner did. They're just getting you in there to, like, try the food and hope you'll come back and pay full price, you know?
I mean, basically, yeah, when it comes to labor, food cost, overhead, and every single other factor that goes into, plate cost, you're like when you put 10% on something like that, unless like your food margin is just like ridiculous.
Sure.
It's gonna suck
so
for sure.
What would happen? So paint me a word picture here. This is one of my favorite questions to ask, and I feel like we're in a spot in the interview where I feel like we're kind of wrapping things up. But what would happen if there were no more line cooks? Do you think that's feasible? Do you think that's a future that we could see with robots being line cooks? Or do you think that, you know, there will always be line cooks?
I think to some extent there will always be line cooks, but there are certain jobs that cooking will require. I mean, it already is automized. If you look at any restaurant right now, granted, I always praise Chick-fil-A and places like that that produce perfect 165 chicken every single time, and it's just perfectly cooked, you know? But those restaurants like could eventually like really easily become just like one giant robot because you don't need it's like those machines, those fryers, they're buttoned and they have like buttons on everything. Like every single piece of chicken looks probably exactly the same. They cut off certain like so much that it's just identical to the next one, so everything can be perfect. But when it comes to places like Gordon Ramsay or Black Belly, Flagstaff, Black Cat, like any Arcana, any of those places in Colorado, you'll never have a robot replace those jobs because there's something that a robot can't do, which is passion. And food is so much more than just food. It's so much more than just art. I think it's one of the best expressions humanity has because it shows our very, it's like, you know, your most barbaric level, you have your peanut butter and jelly sandwich, which is just for like, survival needs or whatever, you know, like your meat or like, you know, some rice, whatever. But, you know, at your highest level, you have like, you know, risotto with like, you know, filet mignon and, you know, demi-glaze with a garnish of, I don't know, like, you know, parsley or something. I don't know, who knows, whatever. But
sure.
I think that like, I love food and I think there's so much expression to be had inside of food, whether it's plating the food itself or just, like, I don't know, just like color you can do. It's just,
sure.
There's something about it that a robot could never replicate in Miami Sands.
I agree wholeheartedly because, like, in mass production food, like, you know, you really could have a... You could have a robot make cheeseburgers all day and all night. You could. You really could. There's not a lot to it. Like, McDonald's cheeseburger. It doesn't need hand touch for that. You know, they're already in assembly line to begin with. That can be mechanized very easily. But I think when you get into more artisanal foods, like Italian foods or even Chinese food, you know, it's hard to bring in anything that's got any kind of complex plating to it, any kind of artistic design. It's going to be hard to teach a robot or any kind of AI, for that matter, like perspective, you know, or stacking or looking at color differences and what makes a palatable color, or, you know, like, how do you explain to a robot what something smells like or how those smells make you feel emotionally? And that, I think, is where the art comes in, because I think a lot of times when you sit down and you eat, you're not just looking for nourishment. You're looking for so much more. You're looking for an experience. You're looking for a personal connection. I just think that that is one of the reasons that the restaurant business is, you know, it's completely and totally the most horrible thing on the face of the earth. But at the same time, it is also, in my opinion, one of the most rewarding places in the face of the earth, because you're making people's lives better. And I think that's a good thing.
Oh, 100%. You know, I used to be in horticulture, and I worked for this one guy who said that, you know, it's, you know, like, you can buy your wife some flowers for sure, and it's going to sit on the table for, you know, a week or so, and that's going to be really nice. She's going to see that every day, and that's really nice. But if you make her food every single night like that, it's just like, you need that. You're going to have, no matter what you do, you're going to have to eat food, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that when you can express, like, pure beauty through your food, the other person really tastes it. And whether it's your wife that you're trying to get some brownie points with, or your customer that you're trying to get a paycheck from, it's a thing of beauty to be shared and had, loved and experienced worldwide, wherever there is a human, you know?
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think that with food comes love, you know? And it's like, food is love. It's so primal. You have to eat. Every organism has to ingest some kind of nutrients from somewhere. But I think the human eating experience is so unique because of the way we taste and we smell and we see and we experience food. But not just that, but because of how many cultures there are and cultures' foods. And you really want to understand a culture. You need to taste their food, eat their food, and then listen to what they have to say. In the environment that they live in, because the food is 100% dependent on the environment. You know, yeah. If you grew up in a desert, you only can eat so many desert foods. And so, like, these, you know, like, I live in the Midwest. We have tons of water, you know, and trees and stuff everywhere. So getting an apple is not a big deal. But if you're in the desert, getting an apple is a big deal, you know? And so I really think that you can learn so much about people and cultures and traveling the world just by trying their cuisine. And I, you know, I don't know. We're totally getting sidetracked here, but I really think we hit on a vein there. It really is a thing. There really is a thing there. And that world peace is as simple as everybody having a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
God bless.
So let's switch subjects for just a second, and because we got the last two questions for the interview. So who would you say on your staff is irreplaceable or indispensable, and why?
You know, it's kind of tough, but, you know, it's, for me, the most difficult thing about it is, it's just like, it's like football. You know, you could talk about Tom Brady, but in the end, he's nothing without his line. Sure. You know, you can talk about the offense, but they're nothing without the defense. And for me, it goes from my chef de cuisine to my dishwasher, where it's like, I mean, sometimes I have to do those jobs, and I know how difficult it is. And so that's why, for me, it's, we are the machine. We are the thing. And so that's why, for me, with one of us falls, we all fall. You know, we only are as strong as our weakest link. And as cliche as that is, it just rings true, because that's what really kitchens are. But I think what everyone hates the most about, you know, like, you know, if someone was gone, it's probably the dishwasher. Yeah. Because there's nothing you can do about dishes piling up, but just look over and go, after I get done getting utterly, royally destroyed by tickets, I'm going to have to spend the next 4 hours after service and do that.
Yeah.
That's my night.
I've had to do that. I mean, you know, I've run places that where you end up, the dishwasher gets sick or he just disappears and who knows why he's abducted by aliens. I don't know. And they never come back. And then you just end up doing, like you said, like 4 hours of dishes. You're like, sure is great. You know, everyone, here's all these servers going home because they got all their money made. And
You know they did.
And it's funny because servers are always saying, you know, the guys in the kitchen make more than servers. And that's just not true. It's just not true. And not even remotely.
You know, I mean, it really depends on your restaurant. But yeah, because what happens is, like, you know, you overall make the same, like, you overall, like, make money at the same rate, but they have like their entire summer where it's just like they're raking in so much money. Like every night it's $200 plus their, you know, like what they're actually getting paid to be there. Where for us it's like just $200+, you know.
Sure, yeah. So, and then you're getting the $500 in your check every week and that's it. There's no opportunity to make more money. So I guess we're down to the last question, which is are you going to stay in the restaurant industry? Are you not? Is this your calling in life? What is your future plans here?
Oh, 100%. I love food. I don't think I could do anything else but play music, play food. You know, food is so... Even beyond the food, like kitchens itself, just the culture that it brings is just something that I think is just really, really memorable and worth being around. I may not stick around in certain kitchens for so long, beginning on like certain people, but it's whether it's a bad time, in the end, it still becomes a good time when you look back on it because there's a lot of camaraderie in the kitchen.
I like it. So you're gonna stay in the restaurant industry because you feel it's the right place for you and it's where you belong, and I love it. So with that wraps up our interview with Mr. Chris Gall. And I just want to say thank you for coming on The People Behind Your Food. So for those of you who are listening to this podcast on any of our services like iTunes, Spotify, Radio Public, Google Play, or on my website, ChefRyanCallahan.com, I'd just like to remind you guys that I do have a pretty awesome Instagram page, which is @ChefRyanCallahan. There are underscores in that username. And then, Chris, do you have a website or a Instagram you'd like to plug?
Yeah, definitely. If you want to follow some of the stuff I played or my band, you can see some of my posts at @what_the_gall, G-A-L-L.
So it's @what_the_gall.
Yeah,
I love it. So anyways, Chris, thank you so much for coming on. Did you have a good time?
Yeah, man, I had a great time. Thank you so much for having me on. It's been awesome talking with you about food.
It's awesome. And so thank you, everybody, for coming on to listening to The People Behind Your Food. We'll be back next week with some awesome interviews. You can always check ChefRyanCallahan.com to see what's coming up next.